From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Barry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a focused look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is looking at President Joe Biden's next budget plan, which he revealed this week, and broader questions about the American economy in 2024 and beyond. Statistics show the country's economic pillars are strong. Unemployment is low, inflation is significantly down from its 2022 peak, wages are up, the stock market is roaring to new all-time highs, and if things hold, it looks like the Federal Reserve might be able to keep the U.S. out of a recession. Democrats would underscore that, while GOP pundits and leaders see current struggles as signs of another recession around every corner. Voters have mentioned economic issues, including inflation and jobs, as their greatest concern in an ongoing Gallup survey since 2022. And according to Vox, recent polls show former President Donald Trump with an 11-to-20-point lead over Biden on the question of which candidate would better handle the economy. Enter Joe Biden's $7.3 billion budget plan for 2025. Here's an analysis of Biden's plan for Odyssey in San Francisco.
Political analyst Mark Sandalow. And Mark, what are some of the headlines from this budget proposal?
You know, it's a Robin Hood budget. It takes from the rich and it gives to the poor. You know, the corporate tax rate goes up. No corporation pay less than 21% in taxes. Most would pay more than that. Right now, it's down about 15%. Billionaires who often make income in different ways than you and I, with all sorts of investments which aren't taxed, would all be required to pay a minimum 25% income tax, which would obviously bring in money from the wealthiest Americans, and it would extend child care tax credits. These were given out a couple years ago by Biden. They since expired, but it cut the child poverty rate in half. It would give subsidies for prescription drugs and for housing and the like. I mean, to me, Donald Trump gets called a populist all the time, you know, meaning he says, you know, whatever it is that's going to sound good to the public. This is a very populist budget. I mean, this is a tax the rich, spend on the poor and the middle class budget. What'll be interesting, as you say, Eric, this is dead on arrival, is what Republicans have been very effective at telling voters before is a tax is for everybody. You tax corporations are going to pass it on to you. Believe me, this is just as good as a tax on the poor. And what Biden says is, look, if you earn less than $400,000 a year, you won't pay a penny in extra taxes.
Is this essentially a policy platform as he seeks re-election?
Absolutely. That's what this is. And I think what Democrats have to do is come up. I mean, when people hear the word tax, they flinch. And somehow Democrats have to find a way to get those added words, the rich, in there, tax the rich, because I think most Americans are fine with that. And we're not talking anymore about, you know, millionaires. We're talking about billionaires. And the real issue, I suppose, is the corporate tax. I mean, it does sound, when you think of, you know, Exxon and Mobil and sort of the big, huge, you know, polluting corporations, and people think, well, you know, of course they ought to pay taxes more. The idea is, you know, hey, their executives don't need to, you know, go to the Seychelles Islands every year. They can go every other year. The fact is, of course, when you tax corporations tend to pass that on to consumers.
But Mark, didn't the corporations get a big tax cut under the previous administration?
Absolutely, they did. And this is what Biden's pitch is going to be. It's going to be that trickle-down economics, which is what Trump pushed, you know, ever since Ronald Reagan years, Republicans have pushed this, that you give corporations and the wealthy tax cuts and the benefits then trickle down. And what Biden's saying is that's ridiculous. He says, you know, this is blue collar Joe saying it's time that we, you know, tax the rich and give to the middle class and to the poor. And like I say, it's been a very difficult message for Democrats to get across. But if the middle class, the people who are not college educated, and the working class in America have been shifting more and more conservative and towards Donald Trump, this is Joe Biden's effort, if he can communicate it effectively, to say, take a look at our policies. I'm the one who's going to help the middle class. He's the one who's helping the rich.
NBC News described Biden's State of the Union address as a fiery campaign stump speech. So, how much of that plan is actionable, and how much of it is essentially a political speech, a way to draw a line between Biden's priorities and Trump's? Guy Williams, president of Gulf Bank and Trust, weighed in with Newell Normand at Odyssey in New Orleans on questions surrounding the actual numbers underlying the rhetoric.
Now, the challenge in taxing wealth is, what do you do in down stock years? Do they get a tax credit back? If their wealth declines, you know, if the tax is 25%, do we pick up 25% of the decline on their stock holdings? I mean, that would seem reasonable, but I don't think that's going to be there. So it's a little fuzzy math, and it's really sort of populist. It's intended to get people to pick on people that are not them and say, well, if those billionaires would pay enough tax, then we would be okay. The other phrase that's used in there is, none of this is going to hit anyone who makes less than $400,000 a year. And that really makes it problematic, because now you're going to tax a very thin sliver of the population and expect that that would make a difference. When you really run the numbers and you look at the people that make above $400,000 and say, okay, we're going to raise their income tax rate from 37% to 39.8%, their taxes would go up from $1.295 trillion to $1.386. So a little bit less than $100 billion. The deficit is $1.7 right now. So this is your plan, and it's not going to get close to solving the problem. Because if you don't touch spending and you only raise taxes on people making $400 and above, you don't have enough revenue to solve the problem. And that's where the math doesn't work. I mean, that's the other thing at least if you present a proposal, the math ought to work internally so that you get to the outcome you're trying to get to.
The dichotomy of this economy is that while all indicators show that it's booming, there are pockets of struggle. Newly minted college graduates are having a hard time finding work, as the latest unemployment rate for recent graduates is higher than the overall joblessness rate and nearly double the rate for all workers with a college degree. That's according to an analysis by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Housing costs, especially in big cities, are crippling. The stock market is as volatile as it's ever been. Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Francisco, talked about the potential dangers ahead with Gaines Podcast in Chicago.
There's some concerns with the commercial real estate out there in cities across America.
Well, there are problems. I'm not sure the concerns about it, Andy, are quite to the level that I think they will be and maybe should be. As you pointed out, Chicago, with a very, very high vacancy rate. Other cities like San Francisco probably have a higher rate. In fact, nationwide, at the end of December, according to Moody's Analytics, the vacancy rate was 19.6. That's the highest since they kept track in 1979, higher than 1986 or 91, which were two other periods of time where there was an office space glut. The difference this time, Andy, and I think it's significant, is we all know that people working from home, for the most part, like it. And so hybrid work schedules have been fairly significant in terms of the change, and it's not going to go back to the way it was. So the point being is that the vacancy rates in this cycle are likely to persist far longer than they have in other cycles. And you know what that means for landlords is, as their loans come due over the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years, one of the metrics is vacancies, because that determines how much cash flow is coming into the coffers.
And there's trillions of dollars in debt coming due this year and in the not too distant future. That is a significant thing that's in play here. And so you kind of spoke to, it's primarily those downtown centers that are feeling it the worst. But there's been some other market factors that have kind of led to this. And I'm thinking of like tightening of lending and that kind of thing. And I want you to kind of explain some of the other things that have led to this beyond just the pandemic and that work from home movement.
Well, just make the number simple. Let's say somebody bought a $10 million building 5 to 10 years ago, and they put down $8 million and borrowed $2 million. So the loan to value was 80%. Well, now all of a sudden, that property has lost 30 to 35% of its value. So the property has gone from being worth $10 million to under $7 million. Now all of a sudden, the loan comes due, and the banker is going to ask that landlord to bring in more money to bring the loan to value back up to a healthy level. And the other factor is interest rates have increased significantly over the last, you know, 3.5 to 4 years. A lot of loans, Andy, were taken when the average rate was about 4%. Well, now, you know, across all commercial properties, it's up to about 6.75%, and for office buildings, 7.5%. You know, I think listeners will find this interesting. You know, you buy a house, and your monthly payment covers both interest and principal. For mortgage, commercial real estate, the only thing the landlord is paying is interest on that loan. So when that loan comes due, it's the full face amount that was, you know, borrowed 3, 5, 7 years ago. So what we're coming to is kind of a crash crunch, I think, for properties that aren't Class A and have high vacancy rates, because the valuations will have declined. And if the vacancy rate, you know, stays high or goes even higher, that's only going to compound this whole problem. So there's a crunch time coming, Andy, and a lot of people after last March, when, if you know, the regional bank thing kind of, you got everybody's attention, it's kind of receded into the recesses of most people's minds. So I think, as you point out, there's $1.5 trillion for banks coming due in the next 3 to 4 years. And as that reality has to be faced, that's where the problem is going to, I think, reemerge. And it's distributed more with regional banks than the large banks.
And commercial real estate are potential trouble spots. So is the ongoing pinch of inflation. Nearly 9 months out from the 2024 election, it's an open question how Americans' feelings about the economy will play out at the ballot box. But there's one thing we know for sure. It will matter. In the immortal words of political strategist James Carville, at the end of the day, in the quiet confines of the ballot booth, people are motivated by many things, but one usually more than others. It's the economy, stupid. This show is produced by me, Lauren Berry, plus Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and Myron Kaplan. Thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.